Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the annoying, are we there yet, of free speech. Are we there? No, we're not there. We haven't even left yet, okay? So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, click on the donate button, send the fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. Extension 3. The operator is standing by. We've got with us Paul Stevenson. Paul, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Patrick.
Oh, my goodness. And there's so much going on. I don't even know where to start. Do you know where to start?
Well, I mean, I guess the U.S. aid apparently to Ukraine has been paused. Zelensky has now responded and said he's ready for talks and peace. Those are probably good places any to start.
Did he apologize?
He stopped short of apology. I'll read out what he's done. He said, this is a tweet. I would like to reiterate Ukraine's commitment to peace. None of us wants an endless war. Ukraine is ready to come to the negotiating table as soon as possible to bring lasting peace closer. Nobody wants peace more than Ukrainians. My team and I stand ready to work under President Trump's strong leadership to get a peace that lasts. We are ready to work fast to end the war. And the first stages could be the release of prisoners and truce in the sky, a ban on missiles, long-range drones, bombs on energy, and other civilian infrastructure, and truce in the sea immediately, if Russia will do the same. Then we want to move very fast through all next stages and to work with the US to agree a strong final deal. We do really value how much America has done to help Ukraine maintain its sovereignty and independence. At this point, I've already decided that Zelensky didn't write any of this. And we remember the moment when things changed, when President Trump provided Ukraine with javelins. We give you javelins! We give you... Obama will give you sheets! We are grateful for this. Our meeting in Washington at the White House on Friday did not go the way it was supposed to be. It is regrettable that it happened this way. It is time to make things right. We would like future cooperation with the United States. I think that's pretty much it. So they backtrack because they're panicking. The problem is all that. That all sounds great. Have you run that past Putin and the Russian Federation?
Yeah. Well,
and he was, by the way, Patrick, it's worth adding, he's been squeezed at home as well. It's not just Trump. The Ukrainian parliament basically today announced their endorsement of Trump. And they said the Ukrainian people long for peace more than anyone and believe that President Donald Trump's personal involvement and peace efforts will be crucial in swiftly bringing an end to the conflict and securing peace for Ukraine, Europe and the world. This was the official statement by the Parliament of Ukraine, the Rada there, as they call it. So there's obviously some pressure at home. There's enough people who don't think, you know, that Zelensky is such a hero, and instead he was just a complete embarrassment. The Verkhovna Rada of Ukraine supports President Trump's initiatives to initiate negotiations towards a peaceful resolution. So, you know, make of it what you will. You've had, whoever wrote that statement has obviously decided to humble themselves a little bit, recognize the mistake they made, and at least they sound like they're open for negotiations now. So it's probably a headache for Trump. It would have been easier if they had just stayed stiff-necked and rude. He could have just said, we're stopping the aid and we're done with you guys, and we'll let Europe completely bankrupt itself, which is what Ursula von der Leyen's now talking about doing.
Well, on the surface, a lot of that sounds reasonable, and always I don't think I heard the word ceasefire, and of course, a ceasefire.
Well, he didn't use the word, but he essentially it is kind of what it suggests. And he's talking about a stop to hostilities in the air and missiles flying and everything else, and you know, we'll do it if the Russians do it, kind of thing, you know.
Right. So, and when he avoided using the word ceasefire, I think that was purposeful, but using other words. We'll just stop fighting each other on the air and on the land and in the sea.
Yeah.
Then could have used the word ceasefire. The reason he's not using the word ceasefire is that That's already been pretty much ruled out by the Russian side, because the Russian side has been burned over and over and over again.
Absolutely, you know, ruled out. Yeah, they've already made it unequivocally clear there'll be no ceasefire.
Right. And, you know, the whole Minsk accord. So Russia refrained from its own military actions. And meanwhile, during those 8 years between the Maidan coup and the special military operation, you had 8 years of the Ukrainian government shelling the Donetsk People's Republic and the Lugansk People's Republic, these two republics that nobody recognized, but they had they were
they break away sort of
they were breakaway provinces of Ukraine that were de facto supported by Russia, but Russia never recognized them until 6 months after the special military operation started. So it wasn't until the autumn. No. It wasn't until like a few days before the special military operation started that. So it wasn't until 2022, February
2022, it officially became Russian territory. They had an election, and I think it was just shortly after the invasion started.
Yeah, there was the two stages. The first stage was just before the special military operation, their independence was recognized. And then that was in February 2022. And then in September 2022, there was a referendum on joining the Russian Republic. For those two peoples, self-declared independent countries, but also for the oblasts or regions, provinces of Zaporozhye and Kherson. So you had
that's right,
and they were admitted to the Russian Federation, I believe, a few days later in early October. But the point I was making was that for those 8 years, these two people's republics were being bombarded, producing somewhere between 12 and 14,000 deaths.
That's Russian propaganda, Patrick. What are you doing?
Yeah. And you know, this is one of the ways that they were burned, because they should not have been being shelled under the Minsk Accord. Russia was in spite of Vladimir Zelensky saying they violated it 25 times, we know exactly what the Ukrainians were doing.
Yeah.
And we also know that the Ukrainian president during most of that time, Petro Poroshenko, along with Angela Merkel and Francois Hollande, the leaders of Germany and France, respectively, who were supposedly the guarantors of this Minsk, have all stated public forums and magazine interviews and whatnot, that they never intended on honoring the fire. They were simply trying to buy time while Ukraine rearmed, or while it armed itself. And so, you know, that you also have the more recent example of when negotiations were going on in Istanbul, and as a measure of, or as a what do you call it? A symbol of good faith. The Ukrainians asked the Russians to withdraw their tanks from the suburbs of Kiev, which they did. Mm-hmm. And then Boris Johnson flew in and said, don't negotiate. And so, you know, the Russians have been burned multiple times, they withdraw, when they when they commit to a ceasefire. So the ceasefire is out of the question. If Ukraine wants a ceasefire, really all it simply has to do is stop pushing. You know, they just have to stop sending people into the meat grinder.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently, Starmer and some Europeans, I think it's Starmer because he's taking the lead and all this, like, it's so cringe over here. They all try and talk like Churchill. Anyway, Starmer, maybe Macron too, apparently, they're going over to the U.S. again this week, according to Mark Sloboda, who I was listening to earlier, and I like listening to Mark Sloboda. I respect him. So I don't know what his source is for that, but, you know, they're going over to lobby yet again. And, of course, immediately, which I thought was rather rude of them to, you know, in the case of Starmer, he was treated, like Macron, he was treated, even though, you know, Starmer's been lobbying for Kamala Harris, he was treated very respectfully and politely when he went over there. And yet the following day, after Zelensky had just basically insulted everybody in America, you know, given him such a warm embrace. That's a middle finger to Trump in many ways. And it seems these people are doubling down on stupid and are willing to whisk World War III rather than lose to Putin and Russia, because Ursula von der Leyen is now talking about she's doing some, you know, economic leisure domain to apparently she's come up with a figure where, you know, $815 billion, you know, for Ukraine and future weapons and all the rest of it. But like I said, these are future weapons. This is like kind of for, you know, Europe rearming itself. Because at the end of the day, Europe has no weapons. Whatever it did have, it's given to Ukraine. You know, the British military is a joke. The German military is not far behind it. I don't think the French military is too great. So they're now talking about the coalition of the losers. Or sorry, the coalition of the willing. And it's all very cringe. And you've got Starmer, you know, talking about, and I quote, "We see," and he's trying to sound really like, you know, I was going to say presidential, but, you know, he's trying to sound like a real serious guy. I don't know who's writing this nonsense for him. "We see clearly before us the test of our time, a crossroads in history," you know, and he's talking about, "We will put boots on the ground and planes in the air, and we will take a leading role." You know, he's so robotic. Most people in the country hate the loser. And most people don't recognize Ukraine, if they ever actually would ever ask the British people. They don't recognize Russia as the greatest test of our time. They call that not having borders. That's the greatest test of our time, the fact that we're being demographically wiped out. How about those apples, you know? Not the Russians, for God's sake. But, you know, even Vance, when he went to the EU, he said it's not, you know, the greatest threat your people face is not from Russia, it's not from China, it's from within. You know, you're rigging elections, you don't have democracy, you're canceling elections, you don't have free speech, which was kind of mentioned to Starmer, who said we've got a very proud record of free speech. Well, historically perhaps, but certainly not in recent times, and most certainly not under your leadership, you little dictator scumbag. You see, essentially, these guys are like Zelensky. That's all they are, is like criminals with suits on and better manners. At least Zelensky just decided to be himself. And that's why Trump said, you know, it's good that I'm glad that the American people have seen this. And then, of course, it emerged, if you'll suffer me for another minute, I don't mean to be in a monologue. It emerged over the weekend, far from it being a setup by Trump and J.D. Vance. It was actually apparently a deliberate ploy by Zelensky himself to pump out more propaganda, to act like the victim, to get the American people on side against Trump. That was according to Keith Kellogg. And also it emerged.
It's interesting. I just want to interject. That was what Andrew Anglin was that was his analysis. And Scott Ritter was saying that he thought that it was a setup by Vance and Trump. I said I don't know if it was or not, but I would like to think it was a setup, because that would mean that Vance and Trump they weren't going to go through with these stupid deals, that they knew exactly what they're doing. I would like to think that.
Yeah. Well, if you watch it back, you know, the Americans were pretty respectful to him. It was only when J.D. Vance was talking about diplomacy that Zelensky chose his moment to pipe up and start challenging him and being rude. I mean, what kind of diplomacy, this guy, he steals our children, he murders everybody, and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, it all got out of control. But, you know, at the time, like we speculated when we spoke at the weekend, he probably did Trump a favor, because Trump was able to say to everyone, the whole watching world, it's going to be very difficult doing business and making a deal with this guy. He's not ready for peace. And then they've stopped the aid, and now Ukraine have come back and with their tail between their legs, because they realize, okay, you know, even with the United States assistance over the last 3 years, we're losing badly. So they've actually come to their senses. But let me just play up a short clip, Patrick, of Ursula von der Leyen to show you where her head's at. Because this is just, these people, by the time they're finished with this whole thing, their obsession with this Russia-Ukraine situation, probably NATO and the EU are not going to exist. In fact, Meloni came out today and said, no way on God's green earth, that she's sending Italian troops into any coalition of the willing.
Hold on one second. Play this for you.
The various meetings in the last few weeks, most recently 2 days ago in London, the answer from European capitals has been as resounding as it is clear. We are in an era of rearmament. And Europe is ready to massively boost its defense spending, both to respond to the short-term urgency to act and to support Ukraine, but also to address the long-term need to take on more responsibility for our own European security. And this is why today I have written a letter to the leaders ahead of Thursday's European Council. This is why we are here together today. I have outlined in this letter to the leaders the Rearm Europe plan. This set of proposals focuses on how to use all the financial levers at our disposal in order to help member states to quickly and significantly increase expenditures in defense capabilities, urgently now, but also over a longer period of time over this decade.
You just can't let it go. So, I mean, you know, Europe is not in a good financial position. It's, you know, there's a hell of a lot of debt. And there is no unity, and they are just prepared to, I've said it before, just sacrifice Europe on the altar of, you know, before it was mass immigration, now it's mass immigration and Ukraine. You know, people have got real problems in this country, economically, with our borders, and it's the same across Europe, and no one's interested in, you know, apart from your normie, brainwashed, typical type of people. You know, most people are not remotely interested in starting a war with Russia. Fancy that, Patrick, you know. How surprising. Well,
fancy that indeed. You know, I wonder to what extent Zelensky was thinking, you know, wait a minute, why aren't they all defending me? Everybody always defends Benjamin Netanyahu. He can do anything he wants. You know, he's a Jew. I'm a Jew. Why? And the thing is, like, the Ukrainian government, obviously, it's not as Jewish as the Israeli government, but for most of Zelensky's term, he's had a Jewish prime minister. When he first came in, he had a guy named Groysman. Was it Vladimir Groysman or something Groysman? Actually, somebody who had gone to the same school as in Ukraine as where David Duke got his PhD. And then Groysman lasted. Groysman had been a holdover from Poroshenko. He lasted a few months. Then he got a young goy, but the whole time that they've had this war going on, it's this guy named Dennis Shmuel, which, you know, I assume is the Hebrew version of Samuel, right? Shmuel.
Probably.
And he is, according to Wikipedia, he's Jewish. He looks Jewish. It's a Jewish-sounding name. And now it's not as if everybody in the Ukrainian government's Jewish, but, you know, you've had people like Igor Kolomoisky.
He's in prison. Zelensky imprisoned him.
Yeah, and he had been, before the falling out, he had been the governor of Odessa. No, governor of one of the other oblasts. But then you've also had non-Ukrainian, non-Jews, like foreigners. So you had the former president of the Republic of Georgia. What was that guy's name? He was John McCain's protege. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And he was the governor of Odessa, Mikhail Saakashvili. And then you had as finance minister in the post-Maidan government, it was an American, like a Ukrainian-American woman. She wasn't Jewish, but all of a sudden, you know, she had been working. He was either State Department or Treasury Department. And she's all of a sudden she's the finance minister or the economics minister. And then famously, Alexander Vindman, who was a lieutenant colonel, and he was working at
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less value its currency, the dollar is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar's cheap. That's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar, has tanked. It's worth nothing. And yet gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis. Historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers. And Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in 5 easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
The finance minister or the economics minister, and then famously Alexander, what was his name, he was Alexander Vindman, who was a lieutenant colonel, and he was working at in the Obama National Security Council, and famously he was born in Ukraine, but he was a Jew born in Ukraine, but he had, as a child, had come to the United States, and he was twice, not once but twice, offered the post of Minister of Defense of Ukraine. So You've had this extremely non-Ukrainian government. I mean, it's just amazing. And I'm just wondering if at some point Zelensky's thinking, they give everything they want. They give Netanyahu everything that he wants. Why won't they give me what I want? I'm a Jew. Why don't I get my Jewish privilege? And they, this is like a big Jewish project, but.
AIPAC. I think one word, AIPAC.
Yeah, I think it's less understood by the typical American goy that this is a Jewish project, and so
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think the Russians really want to have a deal either. While they're relying on the, even under Trump. I think they probably want to just get all this done on the ground, and They want the Americans to stay out of it. Dmitry Peskov, the Kremlin spokesperson today, said that they welcome, you know, this cessation of aid, and that the I'm paraphrasing, but more or less the best way to peace is for the United States to stop pouring in arms here constantly. Like I said, I was also, when I was listening to Mark Sloboda earlier, he said he has sources that suggest that the Russians are preparing for a massive offensive, probably on Kiev. So they will go in there and root this whole regime out, root and branch. And I think that's probably the best thing. And the Americans just stay out of it. And they'll say to Putin, listen, you know, Trump's already acknowledged that they don't have the power. You know, and so he can just say to Putin, listen, you know, we know these people are scumbags. We've got interests other places. If you want to, you know, continue this war, which you're winning, and remove these people yourself, well, we won't try and stop you. And they won't be joining NATO. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, these people live in a parallel universe. What do they think they're going to do? You know, send in American troops into that theater in the east of Ukraine? Could you imagine? Could you imagine the body bags coming back into America to push out the Russians in a territory which is actually a Russian territory anyway? You know, I mean, the whole thing is insane. And these people seem to be prepared to risk World War III over this project because they just cannot let it go. They can't let Putin win. And so we're all going to have to watch them try their best to throw a spanner in the works of peace at every opportunity. You know, it's really crazy, you know?
Well, now there is, we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, and there is some rumors that, well, tonight is going to be Trump's State of the Union, his first State of the Union in 5 years. And
that's right, yeah.
Hi, how are you doing? Nice to see you. It's one of my neighbors. So the State of the Union, there is talk that Trump possibly could announce that he intends to withdraw the United States from NATO. When people hear this, because we're not going to broadcast this until Thursday, our audience is going to know what happened in the State of the Union. As we're recording this, we don't know. I don't think he is going to announce he's going to withdraw from NATO. I wouldn't be surprised if he makes disparaging comments about NATO and that maybe a year or whatever from now, if eventually we withdraw from NATO, people might say, well, you know, you could see signs of it at the State of the Union, but I'm not expecting any kind of announcement like that. But I'm just bringing that up, and people are going to know when they're listening what happened at the State of the Union. We don't know.
Yeah. By the way, just one more thing on that meeting on Friday with Zelensky. It's emerged that at the beginning of the hostilities there with J.D. Vance, that he uttered, sort of under his breath, but people have pointed it out at this point, He uttered a swear word, an insulting word, like it's kind of in Russian, it's like bitch, but it's way worse. In the Oval Office, like just like a direct insult, sort of under his breath. It's been sort of people looking over the footage have seen it, and then there's people who like you understand Russian said, you know, that's a swear word in Russian, and it's a very, very insulting one at that, you know. Just thought I would mention that, as if it wasn't bad enough for him.
Would you like to ride in my ripple? Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? We could float among the stars together, you and I. For we can.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Howdy, cousins. This is RBN host Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn, asking you to please support the Republic Broadcasting Network. Every day, RBN's mission is to use our collective voices to spread truth and relevant information, to gain a deeper understanding of the adversary, and to gain knowledge for survival against the gradual erosion of the Republic. But in order to sustain this incredible communications network, RBN needs your financial contributions. To donate, visit republicbroadcasting.org, call 1-800-724-2719, or mail your donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
It's a very, very insulting one, I thought. You know?
Just thought I would mention that. As if it wasn't bad enough for him. Trying to think what else. Just listening to some guy calling into a radio show over here talking about Scottish guy talking about appeasement and the Russian war crimes, you know, and that these will continue, you know, if we continue to, when the appeasement is complete, because that's the argument over here. You see, we're back to Neville Chamberlain again. As I keep saying, at the time, the British were in no position to stop Adolf Hitler, even if they wanted to. They're in an even less position to stop Vladimir Putin today. The British were not, they forget. The British sort of go around acting as if Winston Churchill won and the British won the Second World War on their own. I distinctly remember the United States having to join that war. I think there was some Soviet soldiers may have been involved in defeating Germany as well. So, you know, this idea that the British were, appeasing Hitler. I mean, Neville Chamberlain wanted to try and give peace a chance, and he had no options. It's not like he could have stopped Hitler. Hitler would have just laughed at him at that point, you know?
You know, why do people idolize Churchill? All of it,
because they're morons, mate. They're childlike. It's just it's like a witchcraft spell of Jewish propaganda. From this narrative that was constructed from World War II, and it's almost like, on some level, I've said it before, it's like a subconscious bribe to a bunch of very childlike people who've never really done that much suffering in their lives, where they've had prosperity if they believe this BS. And Churchill has pivoted along with it, along with the Holocaust, and along with Hitler being the most evil man that ever lived. And this is what they believe. And now they believe the same thing with Vladimir Putin, and we're appeasing him. And like, to this caller, this is a grown man calling in from Scotland, talking this way. And, you know, why does he believe what he believes? Well, because the BBC said that, you know, Vladimir Putin commits war crimes. You know, so he must have. The BBC said it.
Yeah. Oh, it's also tiresome.
It really is, Patrick. It really is. It's just like, I mean, there's a new generation of people coming through, thankfully, but I just wish these people would just grow up. Because that's what it is. It's infantile, like, thinking. It's like, and they think it's a movie. You know, it's like, you remember Julia Hartley Brewer, who I played the other day?
Yes.
She tweeted out today, and she considers herself right-wing. She tweeted out today that I watched the final, is it Final Hour? You know this movie about Hitler and Our Greatest Hour or something? I watched it again last night. I would advise the Trump administration to watch it again. You know, and again, they're talking about appeasement. I think it's called The Finest Hour or some propaganda movie about World War II or something. But, you know, it's a movie, woman. Grow up, you know?
Yeah, the, you know, I'm a boomer, and my dad was in World War II. And he wasn't all that rah-rah-rah about it. And he didn't join on, you know, the day after Pearl Harbor or anything like that. He may have been drafted, or if it wasn't drafted, he enlisted when he knew he would be otherwise drafted and wanted a little bit of choice of where he was going to go to. But that notwithstanding, still, I remember asking him once, you know, who was the worst person ever? And he said, Hitler. I said, why? Because he wanted to take over the earth. I asked him, who was the best person ever? He said, Jesus Christ. But at any rate, this
I agree with him on that.
This business about Hitler being the worst person ever, and even then, like when I was a kid, the rap wasn't that he was trying to kill all the Jews. The rap was he was trying to take over the world. Now, neither one of these is true. But it's interesting how it's changed. Now it's he wanted to take over the Jews, and World War II was all about saving the Jews. That was what it was all about. And, you know, if you wanted to say it was all about saving the Jews, then you shouldn't have had a World War II in the first place. Because, you know, to the extent that, you know, even if you're going to believe all of this Holocaust stuff, it happened in the context of the war.
Yeah.
So we got to lay off of this stuff. Stop invoking Hitler. Stop invoking Churchill's. You know, there's a lot of decent people who do this. You know, whether you're talking about Alexander Mercurius or Douglas McGregor, even Scott Ritter, you know, these people they're always invoking World War II as if United States and Britain were on the right side. And you don't have to say that the Axis was the right side, but frankly, I think the Axis, including Japan, was more sympathetic than the Allied countries. But you don't have to go that far. You simply just don't go there at all. Don't talk about it. Don't invoke it.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, because it plays.
You know, because
it plays into their hand. It plays into their paranoia.
Yeah, and you know, if they're not careful, it's going to end up in more death and destruction. And it's got to stop. I mean, the only thing really preventing this whole thing getting completely out of hand at the moment is Donald Trump and his administration. Because if the Americans are not involved, NATO or no NATO, I don't think Russia's going to be too bothered, because they know. They can just as they essentially, I heard someone say it recently, and they're quite right. Not only are they demilitarizing Ukraine, but they're demilitarizing NATO. They keep sending all these tanks and guns and air defenses in there, and the Russians are just destroying them. So I don't think without the United States that Russia will be too. In fact, I think Putin already laughed at somebody, might have been our country, I don't know, already laughed at, you know, the threat that we possess or something. Or maybe it was Canada. Because we're not a threat to them.
from your girlfriend Maria Zakharova. Is that how you say it, Zakharova? The Kremlin.
Maria Zakharova. Yeah.
Yeah. So somebody raised. Okay, so Trudeau, what's his name? Justin Trudeau, a few days ago said that, Canada would consider sending troops to help Ukraine. And Maria Zakharova said, well, if Canada sends its troops to guard Ukraine, who's going to prevent Donald Trump from annexing Canada?
Yeah, it's funny, man. As I say, I honestly don't think, I think the only people that the Russians worry about are the United States. They realize that would be messy. But, you know, I don't think they're too bothered. I think they know. I mean, listen, if you listen to Ursula von der Leyen, they seem to be quite prepared to at least attempt to, you know, bankrupt Europe over a longer period of time. I mean, now, what are they thinking? Are they thinking this war is still going to be going on in 4 or 5 years? You know, we just need to rearm. It's the rearming plan. You know, now that America's not interested in fighting our wars for us, we need to rearm. Like, Europe hasn't got any other priorities at the minute except to add, you know, insult to injury economically and start a war with Russia. I mean, but as they are at the minute, if they were stupid enough to go in there and think that, you know, that, oh, you know, the Americans, they'll back us up when the day comes. But if they're stupid enough to go in there, they will be wiped out. There's no doubt about it. They're there. They will not be prepared. I don't even think the NATO people, you know, who train are prepared for what goes on there. I've heard stories of people who are hardened veterans who'd served in the Middle East and everything else. They went out there and they said just the scale and the level of violence was just absolutely traumatizing. You know?
Yeah. But, you know, if you look over the many centuries, the French and the English, they had plenty of wars. They fought a lot. But the English don't feel the need anymore to arm themselves against the French. And in just the past 2 centuries, the French and the Germans have had it out a number of times. And yet, they're not arming against each other. You know, you can work things out. And there's no fundamental reason why Russia would need to fight Europe other than in self-defense from some sort of Jewish scheme to destroy Russia that might be launched from Europe. I mean, that's the only scenario. And that's the only reason that the United States and Russia, that Russia needs to protect itself from the United States is because they are in the midst of being in a Jewish scheme to overthrow and dismember Russia. And that's unraveling now, thanks to Donald Trump. Whoever thought Donald Trump would be the voice of reason and then the peacenik.
Mm.
The only person who's mentioning World War III is Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, as I said, you know, thankfully, Italy, which is a country close to my own heart, they have ruled out sending troops in there. So there's some sanity with Meloni in Italy.
Yeah.
Although Russia, you know, I'm sure they're not really worried about Italy because they've got the might. They've got the might of the Baltic states to contend with because they're all up for it. They're like Scooby, you know, like remember Scrappy Doo with Scooby. Let me at him, Uncle Scoob. Let me at him, Uncle Scoob. That's Kaya Kaius. She is Scrappy Doo. She actually went as far as to say that we need a new leader of the free world. And criticizing Trump, you know, this woman just can't wait to have a war with Russia.
By the way, so you watch Shaggy in, well, Scooby-Doo, and you know Shaggy, right?
Yeah.
The voice of Shaggy was Casey Kasem. I don't know if you're familiar with that name. He was an American disc jockey. He did American Top 40. A lot of people know him from that. And he was a friend of mine. He was a good guy. Eventually, I guess about 10 years ago, he had dementia and there was a nasty squabble between his children and his second wife. I'm not sure what was up with that. I had dinner once with him and his wife, who was about 6 foot tall and blonde, had a blonde flat top, crew top, you know, crew cut, something like that. But he was a good guy. He was Lebanese and he was very anti-Zionist.
Good. So,
just saying.
Yeah, no, he would be. But yeah, and then I was listening to McGregor yesterday on the Here Comes the Judge, and McGregor seems to think that, you know, that the Arab states are going to gang up on Israel and that Egypt are mobilizing and stuff like that. I'm not sure that's, I don't know if I could see that. I could just, I don't know. Maybe. I think I also, there was an offer. No, it was little Marco Rubio I saw reported today, apparently approached Russia, approached Putin and asked him, would he be up for negotiating a peace deal with Iran and Israel? After Putin, Trump turns to Iran, Netanyahu stunned. So there's talk of, you know, and Putin has said he's open to the idea of, you know, acting as a mediator between Iran and Israel and, by extension, the United States. You know? So, I mean, I know the lobby has a lot of power over Trump and that, but I think Trump, if he can, he'll try and avoid this whole Iran-Israel situation. I mean, the poor Palestinians never seem to get a break, but I don't think it's part of, you know, Trump's MAGA movement to start a war with Iran for Israel, you know?
You know, here's the thing, and I don't hear anybody else saying this, but so this is, I think this is my thing. Maybe there's somebody else who's saying this, but I remember President Johnson. I don't remember him before he was president. I don't remember him as a senator or as a vice president. But it's my understanding is that as a senator, he represented Texas, and he was a pretty typical Southern Democrat. And the Southern Democrats were segregation. They opposed integration and school busing and all of this stuff. And then when he became president in 1963, he really did an about face, and more than anyone else, you know, he ushered through the legislation of the Voting Rights Act, the 1964 Civil Rights Act, the 1965 Civil Rights Act, some other stuff, which was actually, I think, bad legislation, frankly. But the point is that as a senator, he had to cater to the Texas electorate. That was his constituency. And as a president who was going to run for re-election in 1964, and by the way, won a historic landslide, he was catering to the entire country, not just Texas, not just the South, but to the entire country. And so his operating environment changed, his constraints changed, his plus-minus calculations, the cost-benefit analysis, it all changed. And I was asking the question a few days ago regarding Marco Rubio, who, as a Florida senator, absolutely needs to cater to all these South Florida Jews. The Jews are very strong in Florida. It's one of their maybe their two strongest states, Florida and New York, where they're just absolutely have state level politics on a very short leash. And I was saying, now,
yeah, including laws by the governor there. What's his name? The guy,
DeSantis.
Yeah, DeSantis made a law, an anti-Semitism law, but didn't he? In Florida,
his entire cabinet to Israel in order to sign that law. So yeah, but Rubio now he's changed a great deal in these past couple of months, and I'm asking, well, he's never running for. Well, he's probably never running for a statewide election in Florida. His next election is probably going to be in 3 years running for president of the United States. He probably will. He did before. And so he's got a different constituency now. Now, having said that, now I'm saying with regards to Donald Trump. Donald Trump has, he in his last election and the previous two elections, he took huge amounts of money from Sheldon Adelson or his widow Miriam. He's taken a huge amount of money from Jews, and Jews were an important part, even though Jews have the bulk of Jewish power has been against him and has Judetod him and tried to, well, destroy his political career, throw him in jail, perhaps even murder him. But still, there were certain segments of Jewish power that were supporting him, and he was involved in these transactional deals where he recognized Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, et cetera, et cetera. And what I'm asking now is he's never running for election again. His constituency now is no longer the United States. It is, it's really world leaders. It's Vladimir Putin. It's Xi Jinping. It's, you know, the leaders of the Arab states. It's the prime minister of India. I
the
think
adorable leader.
The adorable leader. That is his new constituency. And because he's trying to establish a legacy for himself, both in America and on the foreign stage. And he's stated very openly that he wants to be a peacemaker. And this is how you go about it. And by being a peacemaker, by shoring up.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Pack up, let's fly away.
Both in America and on the foreign stage. And he's stated very openly that he wants to be a peacemaker. And this is how you go about it. And by being a peacemaker, by shoring up his situation overseas, that could give him political capital to take on some of the hard challenges at home, like immigration. So we only have a few minutes left, but I just wanted to throw that out. What do you think?
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, I think anybody who you know, thinks of running for president the next election will probably just run into the buzzsaw that is J.D. Vance, who basically today triggered the Brits again when he was talking about that the Europeans would be nothing without the United States in terms of support for this war. And they said, what are they going to do, send 20,000 troops from some random country that hasn't fought a war in 30 or 40 years, he said in a Fox News interview. And the Brits took this. Interestingly enough, without even mentioning the Brits, they got triggered by it. It's a bit like shouting to someone, hey, dickhead. And then they say, what? And you're like, oh, I didn't mean you, mate. But, you know, you just reveal yourself. But, you know, it's 20,000 troops from some random country. And he then had to clarify, I wasn't talking about the British or the French. But the British got very offended by this. They were rolling out war veterans. And today on mainstream media, who are saying, you know, we fought hand in hand with the Americans, you know, over the last 30, 40 years in this war and that war. And I don't know who he was talking about. He just said some random country. Maybe be talking about the Baltic states or something, you know? But yeah, I would think that this Trump administration will continue under J.D. Vance. What do you think?
It could. I mean, J.D. Vance, as vice president, has maybe the inside lane. Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, he's run for president before, and I would bet that he's going to run. And the thing is, and then you look past that. Obviously, Tulsi Gabbard ran before. I don't know if she would try to challenge Vance or Rubio. It would depend on things. But within the administration, you also have this Secretary of Interior, Doug Burgum, who ran for president before, and the ambassador,
Baron Trump. What about Baron Trump?
Baron Trump, I'd vote for him. But the ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, has run a couple of times. He's kind of old now, so maybe he wouldn't run. But you've had a number of people potentially with political aspirations. Robert F. Kennedy ran for president. Yeah. And so, and this is a reason why Trump really needs to strike while the iron's hot. He doesn't have 4 years to get things going, because right now he's got control over his administration. But once after the midterm elections, he's got 2 years where he's going to have a team that's working together. But after the midterm elections, there's going to be all these internal rivalries within the administration to be a successor. Maybe if somebody like Vance emerges as a designated heir, that might prevent the squabbling. But
yeah.
Vance is the youngest out of all of those people, and not necessarily the most politically savvy or politically able. So,
you don't know how many of these guys you could actually trust anyway once Trump's out of the way. You know, I mean, you can trust Trump, you know, but in terms of who he is, but you just don't know these other guys. You know, I mean, they can change depending on, you know, various factors. I wouldn't trust Marco Rubio.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't trust him at all. No, I've never liked him, but he might be, if he's an opportunist, and Trump is making the opportunity to carry out will, then he might be useful for a while. But I think we're at the our recording time.
Okay, well, thanks for having me, Patrick. It was a pleasure as always.
Well, thank you for joining me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Beagle Radio.
99.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatty, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, dixierepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio.
only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.